we have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Our last, final broadcast of the year.
Yeah, although rumor has it, we'll be back next year.
Yes.
we've been renewed for another season.
Yeah, a lot of lobbying on that.
Yeah.
All right, so we are going to be getting to here in just a couple minutes the continuing the overhyped and underreported stories for the year. Is that correct?
That is That's correct. Right. We're going to do national this week, international next week. So okay. We'll just keep stringing them out and playing the hits for 2012.
All right.
But we actually do have us are live in the studio this week, so there were actually a handful of things that happened in the news this week too.
That are of note. So starting with, they're both national, starting with reauthorization.
Yeah, this, while political news this week was dominated by the gentle fiscal incline, there was another story that should have been huge. And in fact, when it came up 4 years ago, it was a huge story. And that tells you just how much the domestic surveillance state has become an accepted bipartisan consensus in this country. 4 years ago, there was a huge scandal around the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and warrantless spying under the Bush administration. And there was a bill in 2008, which candidate Obama first had pledged to filibuster, and then wound up not only refusing to filibuster, but voting in favor of when it was introduced and came up for vote in 2008, that provided retroactive immunity to telecommunications companies that helped in the Bush administration's warrantless spying. It also retroactively legalized that spying, and it had a sunset clause on it, which made this spying without any kind of warrants against whomever the executive branch wanted legal, but only for the next 4 years, so through the end of 2012. Well, as often happens with these kind of things, the Senate left, and the House under the Republicans had already passed this. The Obama administration, Obama, of course, now being an executive and deciding he likes all that power, decided that he wanted it renewed without any amendments and without any debate, actually. And so they left it until the very last moment to reauthorize it. This is a tactic that's been used in the past to ram through, you know, Patriot Act reauthorizations and so forth, saying, well, we don't have any time to even have any debate on it, have any discussion about it, because if we don't vote for it right away without any amendments, then we'll be vulnerable to the terrorists. And so the Senate went ahead and passed it with only 23 votes opposed, most of them from Democrats, along with three Republicans. A number of Democrats from the more conservative side of the party, led by Intelligence Committee Chair Dianne Feinstein, who spent the better part of a day on the floor of the Senate doing her best Dick Cheney impersonation and accusing people who won't even bring this up for debate of more or less siding with the terrorists. They went ahead and reauthorized the warrantless spying on Americans. There were, however, four amendments that were offered by Oregon Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley, Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, and Mark Udall, a Democrat from Colorado, that would have provided some minimal oversight to the use of the FISA Act to do warrantless surveillance on Americans. You know, these were things like letting us know how many Americans this actually affects.
So public oversight.
Public oversight, yes.
Because,
transparent oversight.
Feinstein made chair. She's the Democratic chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. She, as Jav said, she was the biggest defender of the bill. She made the comments that, you know, any kind of public oversight would be the first step in destroying the act.
Yeah.
And she made the point that, well, you know, we're watching over it. In other words, she and the other members of the Senate Intelligence Committee. So it's very interesting there that she considers that sufficient oversight, when in fact we've known in the past, not just during the Bush years, but also during the Obama years, that the federal government doesn't release all information to Senate committees when it comes to these kinds of top secret programs.
We've also had the statement from Udall and others who've been critical of this in the past, that if Americans knew how widely that surveillance was being used, they'd be up in arms about it.
Yeah.
And that really puts in context, I was going to mention Feinstein's comments, because it really puts in context that, you know, if Americans actually had that minimal level of public transparency on this practice, it would destroy the program, and they would destroy the program specifically for the reason that they would be enraged at the constitutional violations that it mm-hmm. entails. So inadvertently, she actually said quite a bit of how badly these powers are being abused by the executive branch.
And she really indicated that that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and other programs like it really can't stand the light of day.
All right.
And for the next few years, at least, they won't need to.
And for five years, it won't need to.
The gift that keeps giving. All right. Next.
Speaking of spying.
Yes, and we are speaking directly into the microphones.
Yeah, and this time, domestic spying.
Yeah, the FBI.
Yeah, a report in the New York Times this week that heavily redacted reports from the FBI indicated that the FBI, in conjunction with local law enforcement agencies and other state and federal law enforcement agencies, heavily infiltrated the Occupy movement at its peak in 2011. This is not a particular surprise, at least to anybody who's followed the Occupy movement, and certainly we've seen a lot of indications of that here in the Pacific Northwest with the secret grand jury harassment that's been going on all throughout this year of the, and we talked about that as one of the underreported stories during our local summary last week for 2012, that you've got people here in Washington State and Portland and so forth that have been raided by the FBI and local authorities, that have been jailed for refusing to testify to a secret grand jury, these are people who have not done anything wrong by and large, that other than protest, that the FBI has taken a very aggressive stance against the Occupy movement and allied movements that are critical of economic priorities in this country. And we have not seen reports that they have been similarly aggressive against far right movements that quite frankly are often far more violent both in their rhetoric and in their actions than what we saw from the Occupy movement. It really is very, very telling on that score. And on the flip side of it, for those of you who might be listening who are, in fact, activists, if you're going to do something that might get you in trouble, you want to be very, very careful who you talk with it about, and you need to know your rights when you're to the extent we still have any, which we do, when you are talking with law enforcement or anybody who you think might be law enforcement.
A couple things I saw in those documents that I found interesting. One was, and people can go to this, page 61 of the 112 pages that were released, mentions multiple times that the FBI was aware of someone taking out OWS activists with a sniper in both Texas and other places. And so you have to wonder what further investigation did the FBI do in following that up to what were obviously clear threats to U.S. citizens. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I found interesting was that one of the highlights was that the Federal Reserve apparently has people that were infiltrating OWS meetings. So
The Federal Reserve
apparently is active in gathering some of its own intel.
Yeah.
So
it's amazing.
And the other thing that was interesting about that, mentioning the Federal Reserve also, that they were sharing and passing on and trading intelligence information with private corporate intelligence
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah.
Because of course, many times, for example, OWS and Occupy protests would target banks and other companies, and these companies had their own intelligence on the protesters and their own efforts to infiltrate, and they were sharing those with the FBI and other law enforcement.
Yeah, and there was no discussion there, no indication that that any of this could have been an invasion of privacy or broken any kind of federal law in that regard.
And, when in fact it was actually many of those banking companies that broke a lot more federal laws than any of the protesters ever did.
Exactly. And what I also find interesting too is that if for activists who are listening out there is that oftentimes people, particularly people who are newer to the movement, don't turn on their suspicion meter when they start hearing people propose illegal activity. I think it's important for folks to know what's legal and what's not, and to get comfortable yourself with what you're willing to do, and then be very careful when someone you don't know very well or someone you've only recently met starts proposing illegal activity, because a lot of what happens when people get into deep trouble with the FBI and with the federal government and with law enforcement agencies is when they decide, okay, let's do something that someone else proposes that we do, even though we know it's not legal and we don't know this person all that well.
And we have seen that repeatedly in the radical environmental movement, certainly with a lot of the Muslim kids that mm-hmm. have been entrapped into so-called terrorist plots over the past few years.
Yeah.
It's a favorite tactic, particularly of the FBI.
Yeah, and I know trust is a big issue when it comes to doing political organizing, and I'm not saying you should be paranoid or anything, but I'm saying, you know, everyone should have a pretty strong BS meter and be exercising it.
Use your common sense.
Yeah.
I don't need to tune our BS meters. It's the end of the year. It's time to recalibrate.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of which, let's unless you guys have some other items from this.
No,
past
let's
week.
Let's go to
no,
overhyped.
Let's move on.
Okay,
this
overhyped.
This is the 17th year we've done this. We talked about local last week. We'll do national this week, international next, and probably by the first of the year, which is to say next Tuesday, we will have all this up on eatthestate.org as well, because there's a lot more of them than we can get to in any given week, because it was a rich year for stories both that were overhyped and underreported. And in the overhyped, I think we can just win the award of the 2012 election and almost leave it at that.
Yeah.
Which specifics do you want to try first?
Well, the thing that stood out for me this last year as overhyped was the whole Romney and Obama being neck and neck in the polls, when it was really clear to me and became very clear right after the election that they were not even close.
Yeah. In fact, if you go by state-by-state polls as opposed to the national aggregate, which was routinely what was quoted by national media, even though we don't elect presidents that way. What the overall popular vote is in this country is kind of an entertaining thing to know, but it is irrelevant in determining who's going to be the next president. It's the state-by-state electoral count, and you need 270 to win, and Obama was almost never under 300 at any point during the year. The lowest I ever saw him get in any of the aggregate, you know, the poll of polls was 295. And, you know, in almost all of the states that were swing states, Obama was ahead by above the margin of error for most of the year. And yet we kept hearing this narrative throughout the year, even and especially during October, even in the nadir of Obama's poll performance, which was after that first debate in October, it was still like 295 to 245. It was not close. It was never close.
And and it was hard to tell why, whether it was the Republican PR machine that was so good, or whether it was just news organizations had a vested interest in selling papers and selling advertising and wanted to make it a close race to get people to tune in and to care about the election. I think probably a little bit of both of those things were going on. But it was amazing to be hearing that and knowing that, in fact, it wasn't the case.
The other major thing that was overhyped, and there were some subsets of this. I mean, anything involving Donald Trump was by definition overhyped. But particularly particularly in April, when he had not announced that he was running for president, yet there are polls showing him being the Republican front runner. not that there weren't, at least three or four dozen different people who were front runners at different points in the Republican polls. And what they all had in common was that none of them were remotely qualified to be president of the United States. None of the Republican candidates were.
Including the official candidate.
Including the official candidates. You had two one-term governors who were in the race, and nobody else who And in both of those cases, those governors were not particularly popular in their home states. And in the case of John Huntsman, of course, he also was a non-factor in the Republican primary. But, I mean, come on. Newt Gingrich, Herman Cain, Michelle Bachmann, I mean, you know, Rick Santorum. These are, you know, if you had started in 2010 with a list of the 50 most qualified Republicans, even within the Republican Party, of people who are Republican to be president, none of those people would have been on the list. Mitt Romney might have been, maybe. That's how weak the presidential field was. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, all of the media coverage throughout 2011, 2012 treated these as credible, plausible options for the American public. And they simply were not. You know, within that, we had any number of fake scandals that were ginned up by the Republicans as well. Benghazi, of course, being the most recent. But, you know, the whole thing over contraception, which was a settled debate in this country 50 years ago, just time after time after time, you know, because the right-wing echo chamber would start yelping about something, therefore it officially became a scandal, even if there was nothing remotely credible about the alleged concern.
Yeah. And so I want to move on away from election related stuff because that dominated the news so much this year. Other non-stories that got too much play were included the David Petraeus email scandal. And currently the big one is the fiscal cliff, which is really a fiscal bluff. I don't think anybody in the economic community, any of the economists around will tell you that they really think the fiscal cliff is as bad as the Republicans say it is. In addition, the whole talk about the budget deficit all this year and all last year, the Republicans keep pushing the budget deficit. The budget deficit, it's a crisis. We got to do something about it. In fact, the budget deficit is not very important. And it's a vastly overhyped story.
And I would throw into that also, and this, of course, is a perennial year after year, the whole idea that Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid are somehow in trouble.
Yeah.
And that they need to be reformed because of that. You can make a political choice to reform them, but it is a political choice, not something that is economically required.
Not an imminent problem. And then last on my list of overhyped this year is another current issue that folks are complaining about, which is kind of a non-issue. That's that government is after your guns. I've just been shocked at the number of people I know who I thought were fairly liberal folks or fairly reasonable folks who are panicking and saying, I got to go out and buy a gun because if I don't now, they won't be available next year. That's BS.
All right. Anything else on that or move over to the underreported?
Let's go to what we should have been talking about this year or what media should have been talking about this year. We often were, but.
Yes.
Yeah.
What should corporate media have been covering more?
Well, I've got a list. The top four of mine are all economic related, so we can start with those if you want.
Yeah, go for it.
Number one on my list is that it's been a lost decade economically, if you looked at the statistics all year long about income levels, job availability, the types of jobs Americans are working nowadays when they have a job, et cetera. All of those statistics have pointed to the last decade, starting with the early Bush administration years and going through the first term of the Obama administration has just been a lost decade for America. People have not made any income improvements and have, in fact, slipped backwards in a lot of measurements. Number two on my list is that banks and credit card companies are now quietly getting back into subprime loans. They're not advertising it, but they're taking the same risks they were taking over the past decade, and they're starting to ramp up those subprime loans to people.
Actually, a lot of the different types of things that created the housing bubble are
starting up again.
Either they're starting up again or they never stopped.
And that was a big problem over the last 4 years was government, instead of trying to clean things up and saying, look, we gotta make sure the banking industry, the housing industry are not run the way they've been run over the last decade and a half. And instead of doing that, they've been pushing to let's set the clock back to 2005 so that we can go back to the height of the housing market bubble. And that's currently what we're headed for again. In this time, it's not a sale of single residences that's the big issue. It's an overbuilding of apartments is going on. And that's something that hasn't been talked about much either. Number three on my list of underreported economic stories is the $26 billion settlement with big banks, the much ballyhooed settlement, is only going to help less than a quarter of the 4 million people who have lost their homes since September 2008. That was never really analyzed by the media. What exactly was involved in that $26 billion settlement? It's been a slap on the wrist, and it's not really going to help people. It's not going to help the housing market.
The additional piece of that is that the $26 billion represents a tiny fraction of the profits that were made by these banks off of their illegal practices.
The huge profits. And
so there is absolutely no reason for banks not to turn around again, which is, as Maria just said, they're doing, and do the same thing again, because it will be just as profitable next time.
And there have been no clawbacks of any of the big profits that those banks have made, and that those CEOs and upper management and shareholders have taken home.
And there won't be, because the settlement shielded those companies against any further civic liability.
And number four on my list is that Edward DeMarco, the head of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, which oversees Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, has refused to offer debt forgiveness along the lines that most private banks have done. Meanwhile, Freddie Mac is currently buying up investments that will increase in value if they can keep homeowners from refinancing. Currently, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac insure half of the mortgages in the United States. So there's a big problem with the housing market right there. If you can't get Fannie Mae, and the head of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, which oversees Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, to begin a debt forgiveness program for people, that's a huge problem. Edward DeMarco was appointed during the Bush administration, and Obama has done very little to try to get him replaced. Number five on my list, moving away from the economic stories, number five on my list is Google data mining. During Google's street mapping project, where they sent cars around to try to map every a residence to try to put it onto their street mapping app, they collected all kinds of payload data. In other words, they were tapping into home Wi-Fi networks and collecting information, everything from your email that you sent out to credit card information. That was a big scandal this year that came and fizzled out and disappeared almost as soon as it was announced.
Yeah, I had a number of others this week. Climate change, of course, was a huge one. Not just that the climate continues to change in ways that are rapidly accelerating, rapidly worse than any of the worst case scenarios that scientists keep trying to draw. It keeps getting worse faster than what anybody had previously expected. And that has not been a story. And the fact that the U.S. government
was it during the elections either?
The U.S. government has continued to not do anything, even though we are by far the world's biggest greenhouse gas producer per capita, has not been a story. And as Maria just said, the fact that it was not discussed during the elections at all, either by the candidates or by the media, was remarkable. The Republican Party having essentially setting up shop in an alternate universe, having nothing to do with how the world actually is or functions, or having anything to do with facts and stuff.
And the media refused to call them on it and correct their errors.
Yeah, as we hear in Counterspin each week, this whole notion of false equivalency that the Republicans claim one thing and the Democrats claim another, and nobody really knows what the truth is. Well, that's not true. We actually do know what the truth is, and it ain't what the Republicans are saying
in
most cases.
And it's not that hard to find the answers, but the media almost never does.
Yeah. Another subset of that is that, the reason we have paralysis in our federal political system right now is because Republicans control one house of Congress, the House of Representatives. And the reason Republicans going forward will control that house, at least for the next 2 years, and quite possibly for the next 10, is that Republicans have, even though they got fewer votes overall for the House by a fairly wide margin than the Democrats did this year, they still got more seats because Republicans at the state level have gerrymandered so many of the drawings of the congressional districts so that they win They give the Democrats a certain number of districts that are won by large margins, and then Republicans can win a majority of the districts by smaller but still comfortable margins. You get very little turnover from an incumbents being threatened, so you don't have that many swing districts available, and you wind up with Republicans having a disproportionate number of seats to the number of to the amount of number of people that overall actually vote for them. Similar to you have a disproportionate Republican power in the Senate because of the smaller states tending to be more conservative on average.
Yeah, and it gives the illusion, too, that the Republicans are a more populist party when I don't really think that's true.
Yeah, there were a number of advances this year in the domestic surveillance state that didn't get a whole lot of mention. We in the media, we mentioned a couple of them at the top of the show just from this past week, the infiltration of the Occupy movement and the reauthorization of FISA. And in general, the expansion of warrantless spying, the lack of privacy of most Americans, the expansion of the continuing expansion, even though the war on drugs is now pretty widely unpopular, and we saw the first cracks in that this year with legalization of marijuana in two states. But the prison industrial complex continues to expand. We have now a lot of domestic law enforcement agencies using drones. We have, similar to the problems that the SPD has had around abuse and improper use of violence and racial bias and so forth. We've seen that in a number of especially larger city police departments around the country. The whole scandal around NYPD spying on Muslims, which was not a local New York City story. That was a national story because it was being run out of NYPD, but it was being done in conjunction with other federal, state, local agencies all around the country. Mm-hmm. That was a national story, and yet it really didn't get much attention outside the immediate New York metro area. What all of these things have in common is more and more power, centralized, unaccountable, and secret, and immune to any kind of court challenge because of course it's all about national security. So the lawsuits against it, by and large, are being thrown out for having lack of standing or because it would be a quote unquote threat to national security. All of that's being expanded, and all of it is being done with very, very little media attention or scrutiny. We had an enormous scandal around pedophilia again this year. Not involving the Catholic Church, but involving the Boy Scouts of America. 50-plus years of an enormous organization that has a presence in every community in this country, and cover-ups of people. There's no nice way to say it. Having sex with the kids under their care and charge, and whereas with the Catholic Church, it really was this story that has gone on for years. There have been enormous civil suits. It's really been a huge hit to the credibility and moral authority of the organization. Here you have the Boy Scouts, which has already been under fire for a number of years for their overt homophobia. One of the more conservative national nonprofit organizations in the country, and yet their behavior in this regard was a story for a day or two, and then basically disappeared. It seems to me it should have been a much, much larger story than it actually was. And we're running out of time here, but one more that's deserving of mention that's just happened in this past month or so. Mississippi has just become the first state to not have abortion available anywhere in the state. They didn't make it illegal. What they did is they've continued to chip away and drive clinics out of business and drive women out of state and drive doctors out of practice. The last doctor in the state of Mississippi who was able and willing to provide abortion care for women who need that health care service, the state legislature passed a law that is going into effect now that makes it possible for hospitals to deny hospital privileges to doctors who perform this service, and the hospital in fact has denied it to this doctor and said specifically that they're doing so because of the threat of protesters and the threat of violence from anti-abortion people. That tells you all you need to know about pro-life, and it is a snapshot of how difficult it is in many parts of this country to get a legal and safe procedure.
Yeah,
right,
and
now
in the meantime you have to be asking, what's the FBI doing? They're obviously not going after these violent anti-abortion groups. They're instead going after activists.
Talking as we do every week with John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the State. Where do people find Eat the State?
www.eatthestate.org. We have all these and more, and we'll have the local and the global as well, and that'll be up in the next few days. And Happy New Year to everyone.
Yeah, and try to have a private New Year if you can.
And then
we dare you.
And then get out and you know, raise some ruckus in 2013.
Yeah.
Good plan.